This episode of This episode of Untitled Rothfuss Podcast is sponsored by our friends at Backblaze. If you remember a few weeks ago, Pat left his hard drive with Doors of Stone on it at airport security, and I demanded that Pat get an online backup situation in order. After we posted that episode online, I got a very nice tweet from Backblaze, and they not only offered to help with Pat's online backup situation, but they also offered to sponsor our podcast with a very generous contribution to Pat's World Builders charity. Backblaze is an unlimited and unthrottled online backup service. It is founded by ex-Apple engineers, and I think that the design expertise really shows. Backblaze runs natively on your Mac or PC, and it easily lets you access all of your files on the web or on iOS and Android devices. And if you get really screwed, you can even order a hard drive in the mail with all of your data backed up onto it if it really hits the fan. Backblaze is just $5 per month per computer. No gimmicks, no tricks. I use Backblaze. I love it. It saved my ass many, many, many times when I've done something dumb. And now for listeners of the Untitled Rothfuss podcast, Backblaze is offering a two-week free trial available at backblaze.com/untitled. Our thanks to Backblaze for sponsoring Untitled Rothfuss. Hi, Pat.
Hey, Max.
This is kind of weird.
It is a little weird. There's a lot of things that you can do kind of in private that are fun and intimate, but as soon as you do them on stage, it's illegal in some situations.
I already know this is a question I'm going to really regret asking, but what amount of clothed are you when we normally record the podcast?
You are playing with fire with that question. There's some things once you learn them, you cannot unlearn them. It might require a retitling of the podcast if people were to know that. Actually, because we do it on a Mac, and I am not a Mac user, you know, one of the recording things that we do, so you have a backup of my audio. I can't do that on a PC, so I do go into the office and I use somebody else's computer. So I am actually, for the most part, wearing clothes. I hate to disappoint there.
Okay. You do know that Skype runs on like a Windows computer.
It can, but not that little backup app. That thing that records.
Oh, the little recorder thing.
Yeah.
Okay. Right.
Yeah.
That makes the show sound good. How's your PAX been?
It's been pretty great. Pretty great. I have been forgetting about the potential of the megaquake for the most part and just been able to enjoy myself.
Now, do you have your bug-out bag with you?
I didn't bring an entire bug-out bag, but I have turned my normal carry-it-with-me-everywhere backpack. I have added some bug-out items to it.
Okay. And your plan, we talked about this, your plan was, in the event that the megaquake happens, because we're west of the I-5, so this is all getting wiped out. I mean, really, none of us are getting out alive when the tsunami comes. But your plan was to sort of trade on your cred as an author to have fans bring you survival items like water, purification pills.
Well, I'd put together a list of all the things I should take, but the putting together the list took me so long that I didn't have time to go shopping before I came to the con. And I wasn't really sure where to buy water purification.
This is really our life in a nutshell. It's like we spent too long making the list of survival gear to acquire any survival gear, and then the apocalypse happens. We're like, I have a list of all the things I didn't get.
And
very well detailed.
But you know, my plan was, it's like, you know, I'll have some like merch with me, and so if anyone out there brings me water purification tablets, I will trade you for some Name of the Wind merch. But no, the real backup plan is that I erased all copies of Book 3 except for the one I have with me. So if the megaquake happens, then like, all you people from all over, you better come and find my ass.
Do you know what would be pretty funny? Because there's about 500 people who I presume are fans, you know, who would help you out in a survival situation. I think it would be pretty funny if just, like, let's say that, you know, the tsunami is coming and we've got, you know, 30 seconds to prepare. If everyone in the audience sort of, could you go through your bags and pockets and sort of produce any sort of gear that would help Pat survive the tsunami and come up and bring it on stage and we'll see how well Pat does. So I think this will be pretty funny.
An umbrella, we got beef jerky.
Okay. All right, we'll review. You'll be able to get these things after the...
A really warm hat.
All right. All right.
I got jelly beans.
Yeah.
Yes. You will
Everyone
be able
will
get
everything
these,
back.
A
yeah.
flask of whiskey, chocolate.
Okay.
Mini first aid kit.
All right, all right. We've, I don't.
A beer.
This was really immediate. This was immediately regrettable.
I don't think an umbrella will actually save you from the tsunami. Burp cloth for a baby.
Oh man. Okay.
Half a sandwich. Someone's diary.
Pat, someone actually
Toilet
has.
Toilet paper.
So, look at this. Someone actually has. I don't.
Just one shoe. Okay, we're spiraling into madness at this
All right,
point.
Everyone go sit down. Can I hang on to it? I'll make sure you get it back.
A condom.
Okay. This is,
yes.
So.
And this is, I think somebody just gave me the key to their room. Which, so
Was
long
that
as,
the same person as gave you the condom?
I don't know, but these two things certainly have a synergy to them.
All right, this is a good illustration of how screwed we are in this situation. So one woman in the audience brought up what I would describe as a survival tool, and it's this thing, and it's got some sort of implement on the end of it, and it's like rugged. It's clearly some sort of emergency gear, but yeah. I don't know what it is or how to use it.
Oh, actually, here, this
Does
is
anyone,
this
you know
has
what to
way
do with
more
this?
Stuff that you can't use on it. This is a multi-tool. I would just hurt myself with this. See, I can't even... Oh, yeah, there. It's a pliers. I can open it.
All right, what else? We have a lot of novelty hats.
Oh, hand sanitizer. I would use this for when I was injured or performing spontaneous surgery on anyone else who needed it, or if I was just bored. Sunglasses, if I'm suddenly having a hallucination where I'm in Smokey and the Bandit.
What if you need to walk away from an explosion and look cool?
Yeah, yeah. Dangerous.
Yeah.
Whiskey, which serves as a sanitizer, a nutritional source, and escapism. You know, that's
yeah, morale.
Everything.
Yeah.
Morale booster.
Yeah.
A valuable universal barter good. I would be able to do pretty well with this.
I would crumble. I wouldn't know what to do with any of this stuff. This is actually slightly better than I thought it might be.
If you bring me a banana, I can show you how to... because I had somebody explain it to me. It was really helpful. This has a great expiration date on it, too. It's this condom is good until 2019. I don't read a lot into that comment. There's a ton of beef jerky up here, actually, and some Ricola. Because, you know, when you're screaming, help me, help me, help me, for days on end, your throat will get sore. Yeah, this we could do worse, folks. This is a good trial run.
So I know we both have sort of an interest in disaster preparedness, I'll say, to make us sound that's probably the least crazy version of what we could call it.
I think we're apocalypse junkies is what we are.
Yeah, it's like half hope, half fear, half excuse to buy a lot of books.
Yeah.
Yeah. What have you, so I don't know that we've talked about this on the podcast, but you, do you, ha- you have sort of a series of structures and shelters in Stevens Point. Would any of them be considered an apocalypse shelter, like some sort of bunker?
Right now, World Builders, I bought a facility for them because we were getting way too crowded. First, I had an old student rental that I was using as a writing space, and as we hired more and more people for World Builders and we needed a place for t-shirts, we used that old student rental, but then it was too small, and I bought an abandoned Masonic temple. So it's great because they like bricked up all the windows, so it's a great warehouse. And as a bonus, you know, we were talking with the realtor, and I said, you know, we're going to be storing a lot of books in here. And he goes, that's fine. I go, you may not realize how heavy books get. And he goes, no, this is all prefab concrete construction. And I go, you know, books will, if you bring too many books into a house, you will collapse the house. And he looks at me, he says, you could park cars, you know, on the floor of this cement, you know, construction. And I go, oh, he goes, yeah, they were masons, they built this. And so effectively a temple is a bunker, a windowless, like cement with brick on the outside bunker.
And really, don't temples have the best apocalyptic fantasy literature?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. I don't think it's consecrated in a traditional way, but you know, I could do that. I could fake that up real quick if it was like a zombie apocalypse thing. I could, I'm pretty sure I have enough resource books. I could find out how to bless the place.
Well, I live in the city, so when something really bad happens, I'll have like, there's like 8 hours of potable water and like 12 hours of food in a major like metropolitan city, and then you just die pretty much.
Mm-hmm.
So I've long thought about getting some sort of land. That's about it. That's about as far as I've gotten. But
it's a good first step.
Yeah, I think it'd be cool to have some sort of land with a bunker on it. And if the world doesn't end, it'd just be a really nice place to go camping.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and you could keep it kind of pristine, because if you're really worried about the end times, you don't necessarily want to build a cabin there, because in the end times, the terrible things happen in cabins in the woods. What you want is perhaps like a faux cabin to distract like hillbillies, zombies, or demons, or whatever. And then what you want is this secret underground bunker over here where you would actually be living, you know? And there you would have, I don't know, I imagine water, board games.
Podcasting rig.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, a broadcasting system so we could continue to produce the podcast. What else would you need? Blankets?
Well, books.
Books.
I
yes.
think a lot about. I have a this might be kind of weird, actually. I don't. Oh, whatever. I guess,
yeah,
I'm, gonna say, I guess I'm saying this now. I have a whole bunch of books that I haven't read because I just assume someday that I'll either be trapped in some sort of apocalypse bunker or in prison, and I'll have to have some good stuff I haven't read. So I have like a couple of like emergency books where it's like, here's some Shakespeare I haven't read. You know, here's some literature I'm kind of saving.
I think a lot about, because you can try to plan for everything you'll need, and that's fine if you're dealing with like an immediate crisis apocalypse. Like you're in a city and, you know, there's just no more water, there's no more food, then you need water and food. But if you're dealing with a long-term apocalypse, you know, from 3 to 6 months, from 6 to 8 months, you're really much better off to have laid in a supply of barterable material, because, you know, other people have like farms, you know, other people have goods or services. And if you can trade for them, you know, it's just way easier to get maybe a couple of pallets of, I don't know, I imagine magic cards.
In the booster packs, in the foil?
I mean, sealed. Yeah, you'd have to leave them
sealed.
Yeah,
it's going to be very hard to draft after the apocalypse.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Perhaps I imagine like liquor and pornography. Isn't that going to be?
Do you think they'd allow proxies if the apocalypse happened? Would they be like, it's finally okay?
No, that still would not fly.
Not cool. Okay.
No.
Sorry, I brought that up. do you have like a favorite like realistic apocalyptic scenario? Like if you had to pick the odds, do you have any? What are the ones that really concern you?
Kind of, it depends locationally, like where I am. If I'm traveling, I worry about something catastrophic that's going to disrupt flight patterns, because, you know, if you realize that, you know, civilization is kind of a fragile thing, and there are some things that will disrupt travel. And if I'm away from the family, that's my big fear, is that I won't be able to get back.
The thing that gets me, like, I don't worry too much about like the natural disaster category, because I think or you know, even really some of the worst case scenarios for like global warming. See, humans are pretty, I mean, they're remarkably adaptable. Like, we'll figure it out. It won't be pleasant, but we'll figure it out. But it's other people that scare me. It's like, what happens in the aftermath of a disaster? Or with global warming, it's not that the Earth is going to become uninhabitable. It's that before the Earth becomes uninhabitable, it has to become a little bit uninhabitable, and then the people become really scary.
Yeah, it's one of the reasons I don't mind living in central Wisconsin. I mean, we've got a lot of space and a lot of farms, and I bought my piece of land. But now the trouble is I want to build my dream house, and that means like, I want it to be energy efficient, and I want it to be nice for hosting a party, and I want it to be like having like nice secluded space where I can write, but also to be a functional apocalypse bunker. And you know, that doesn't work well with a lot of south-facing glass windows, you know, because it makes for like, oh, we've got a nice view, you know, over the hill. And it's really good for the passive solar in the winter. It'll keep our heating costs down. And then I think, but you know, and you know, you joke about zombies, but zombies are a good rule of thumb if I'm thinking about what happens when, like, you know, there is great social unrest and, like, maybe somebody decides that you're going to go pillaging. You know, and I think here's the problem with geeks. We all assume that when the apocalypse comes, now be honest here, show of hands, who feels like you're a little bit looking forward to the apocalypse because you're going to like Mad Max it up, right? A little bit. You know, and not all the way, but a little bit, right?
Seeing a lot of dudes with their hands up right
now. Yeah.
A lot of dudes.
Because we think we'll like get a motorcycle and we'll like, you'll stockpile some gas and you get like a baseball bat. And if anybody is like, I like causing trouble, you'll like take care of that on your motorcycle. You get some leather, you get a leather coat, you put some studs on it, and there you are, you're Mad Max. The problem is if y'all were get together and like form a motorcycle gang, there already are motorcycle gangs. And they're better at it than you. You know, because you think, you know, we'd start level one, but we would slowly, no. What would happen is the other motorcycle gangs would be like, all right, let's go. And we would be the goblins they kill for XP. And,
there we go. You got to transition after a laugh, Pat.
Oh, is that what we do?
First rule of fake editing in a live podcast, yeah. So here's something I think about this all the time. You know how different eras of like American culture have had different monsters that really spoke to people, like different fictional monsters, right? So you had like the Blob was communism. Mm. Right now it's real silly because we don't think of the world in those terms.
Right.
Do you think there's something about zombies that they're sort of everywhere?
I do. I think it's like a weird combination of wish fulfillment and like a pervasive cultural fear. I think that, you know, what it speaks to, if there is a zombie apocalypse, what's the reality of that? It's like everything is bad everywhere. You cannot fix it. All you can do is try to survive on a day-to-day basis. And I think this is really appealing to a lot of us who live in lifestyles that have no immediate purpose. And let me explain that a little more concretely. I was working a...
You sure you don't want to just stop there?
All of you are useless and you're all going to die. I'll just skip to the end of the story. No, here's what it is. I was doing something, and it says a lot that I can't remember what it was. I was in the middle of a Skype call, working, I think maybe doing some art direction on a project for a Kickstarter, for a hobby, for a side project that I was doing instead of the job that I should have been doing. And my girlfriend opens the door to my office, and she goes, "My parents were in a car wreck." And I go, "I've got to go." And I turn off the computer, and for the next 3 days... that's all I deal with. Because I knew what my job was at that point. I was there to support Sarah. And because I have a lot of hospital experience, both my parents grew up in hospitals, and Sarah's family are not hospital people, I could go in, I could make information move better between doctors and people, and help keep the family informed, help keep the family out of the doctor's way. I knew what my job was, and it was immediately important, and I had to do it right then, and it was not a joyous thing, but that is satisfying. Knowing exactly what you are supposed to do and doing it is satisfying. What is not satisfying is an unending slog of purposeless, directionless, like oatmeal behavior. Like, for example, imagine a world where you never, ever, ever had to do email again. Think of it. Think of never doing email again. Never. Not just ignoring your email. An email, a world where email does not exist anymore. So not only do you not have to do it, you do not feel guilty for not doing it. Can you feel like the ebullient joy rising in your chest at that thought? Who thinks of this like, oh, this is my personal Valhalla?
I'm kind of anxious. Like, what? I don't know what to do anymore.
This is what the zombie apocalypse offers us, is a world in which your needs are immediate and your problems are immediate and you solve them. And if you survive, you have won that day and you have done everything you should. And that's a marvelous thought in the time when, you know, it's like, well, today I worked and I will eventually receive money which I will use to pay future bills and perhaps incrementally reduce my mortgage so that in the future maybe I will retire so that I can have more free time to do email. It's like that's a less than entirely satisfying plot thread.
Well, there's this idea I came across. I think it's like a psychology term, and the idea is it's called free floating anxiety. Mm. And the idea is like people are basically wired with a certain amount of anxiety that you just have, and that, you know, it comes from like that we evolved to live on a planet where you were getting chased by a tiger, you know, every day. And now it's like, you know, I like wake up and I walk to the office and I eat a donut and there's no part of my day where I'm chased by a tiger, but I still have a certain base level of like free floating anxiety, and the anxiety's got to go somewhere. It's going to, whatever the dumb shit is in my day that I have to do, that my anxiety is going to like latch onto it and make it a calamity. And that really comes out for me when I go on vacation and like the littlest things. It's like, where are we going to eat for lunch? Like, I have to know. What's the plan?
If you think about it, if you see, and depending on how big a city you live in, this might not, you know, work for you, but I live in Stevens Point, which is pretty much the forest with a few houses in it. If you see a rabbit, you know, and a rabbit's just like hanging out and it's eating some food, and then it goes, and it like freaks out and it tears its ass off away because it's a prey animal, and then it does this 100 times a day. It's like, holy shit, I heard something and I'm gone. The thing is, like, we have the same biological impulses as that rabbit that we developed because you need that shit to survive in the wild. But we have no outlet for it. Nothing's going to try to eat us, mostly, for the most part. And so we end up with no productive use of these biological imperatives. And for me, that makes me kind of a low-level, like, angry. That's how it manifests. For Sarah, it's the same thing, except it's usually directed at me, you know? I think she views me as like kind of a predator in this situation. And so my philosophy for a long time was, it's like, I'm going to get in trouble about every 3 days anyway, so I might as well earn it. You know, I might as well do something that's going to, I'm going to get like in trouble, so I'm going to do something that I deserve to get in trouble for, and then we'll both be happier. But then I thought, you know, I just need to help her find a way to like use up these rabbit impulses. And so I went, I thought of this coming home, and I startled a rabbit out of somebody's yard. And so instead of coming in the front door, I went to the garage and I got a ladder out of the garage. And I put it up against the side of the house. We just put on a little addition into the house. And so her bed was right by the window on the second floor. And so I climb up, you know, and I kind of on the windows, I make some noise. And you know, you hear it, but you look and, well, it's the second floor window. Nothing can be there. And so I wait till she gets real close. And I'm like, you know. And that's like, I'm really sure that's good for her because I mean, we're designed for that level of stress to occasionally intrude in our lives, and she'll thank me for that eventually. And if not, and I'm going to get in trouble from the ambient stress anyway, I've earned it, you know? So...
I don't even know what to go. I don't even know where to go from there, except that I'm so glad we live in different cities.
Oh, I would do way worse stuff to you, man. Oh.
Oh boy. Oh yeah, zombie. I have a whole different thing about
yeah,
zombies.
Yeah, give me your theory.
Okay. So I think the zombies is more my generation, and I grew up during the Bush administration. Which for me, you know, it's like when you're at that age where you're, you know, I was like 13, I think, when Bush got elected president. There were air quotes around that. And, you know, it's like you're in social studies class in school and you're learning, okay, here are the rules for the country and this is how you're supposed to play the game and all the players play by the rules and that's the Constitution and the courts and stuff. And then you turn on the news and you're like, wait a minute. That's not how things are supposed to work. I think you really get that like Twilight Zone feeling of like nothing makes sense. Everybody went crazy, and then we went to war in Iraq, and it was like you know it was the same thing of like you would see one version of the facts on the news and another version of the facts if you went online and like looked at you know primary source documents. And I think that's what's to me that's the scariest thing about zombies is it's everybody goes crazy all of a sudden. It's like it's that idea. And also like the other piece of it is we increasingly live in a world where it's like, well, who makes decisions in the world? Everybody and nobody. Like who puts the results on Google? Right? The horde. And somehow the horde is smarter than I am, but I don't really get it, right? It's still not really anything I can move, even though it's like or I can't really move the needle on it. Even though it's way smarter and bigger than me, and it's just sort of the way the world is going, and I think zombies really speak to that. I think zombies really speak to that fear of like it's this idea of like you thought you knew your neighbors, you thought you knew your parents, but you know they get touched and they go crazy.
I heard one theory which was the let me think if I don't want to get this backwards. I think the zombie fear is. Let me think. That's the liberal fear of conservatives, you know, where it's like they're all kind of lockstep, you know,
yeah,
all
the bloodthirsty, crazy people rising up and taking over the country. Exactly.
Vampires are the conservative fear, where it's like we're blood sucking. You know, we drain things from society. We can turn other people's into...
Oh, it's into, like sex teens on the CW.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
I don't know if I buy into either of those, but it was an interesting thought
that's
experiment.
That's so interesting because it totally plays into this idea that, you know, liberals and conservatives are both have all this mythology around purity, around the idea of purity. So in a conservative sense, it's all about ideas. It's all about you can't let the impurities come in through ideas or through language, and that's where you get these crazy arguments like, oh, we can't allow gay marriage because what if my child sees two men kissing on TV? What will I say to them? There's that great Louis C.K. joke where he's like, I don't know, it's your shitty kid. You figure out what to say to them. But liberals have a whole different thing about purity where it's like it's all about like your body and food and toxins and they get in and it's all you know that's its own brand of craziness.
Well, and I think what it really speaks to is the unthinking stereotype that one group puts on another. Because what do the liberals think about conservatives? It's like, well, they don't think about anything. They're just, and they all kind of act without thinking in this destructive way. And what do the conservatives think about the liberals? Well, you know, they're sexy and out to destroy society, and they look like regular people until they strike, you know? And I don't know. It's
well, I love that they both have like the transmission vector too, where it's like if you get too close to the other, they'll flip you. You'll become a vampire.
Yeah,
like the worst thing.
Yeah.
Well, I think we solved that.
Okay.
Yeah.
I think it bears discussing that when you originally approached me and said, "Hey, let's do a podcast," you said, because you know, I said, "Hey, I just bought a piece of land up in Wisconsin."
You bought a piece of land.
Yeah, and this was okay. Years ago. I said.
Oh, I thought maybe I was in for a surprise.
No, okay. And and I'm like, I'm going to build my apocalypse shelter, expecting you would kind of like have a laugh at me, and you're like, do you know a good place for land for an apocalypse shelter? And I'm like, actually, I do. I've been looking at a lot of property, and there's one right next to a stream, so you have free flowing water, and we started talking about it, and you're like. We could do a podcast where all we talk about is what we're planning for our apocalypse shelters. That's where this started. It must have been more than a year ago at this point.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah.
Live from the bunker with Pat and Max.
Yeah. Yeah, it's sort of a hobby for me, thinking about how it might go wrong. But I will cop to it. This is probably where I put some of my free-floating anxiety. I was in Boston, I think maybe a year ago, going to a con. And whenever I'm at a con, I'm traveling, and you know, I'm exhausted. So I grabbed a nap. And I'm laying in the hotel room. I'm zonked out. And then I feel like a thump. So I'm pretty much unconscious, but I feel something. There's a noise, and the bed kind of moves. And my first thought, super volcano. The one under Yellowstone. That's my first thought. As I rise into consciousness, it goes, oh, shit, it's the super volcano. Because, you know, even coming out, I went, I'm in Boston, that's over there, you know, that would be about right, just kind of a, you know, it's like now we're, oh, shit, there's going to be a cloud of ash, it's going to really disrupt all transportation, I'm going to, right, and then as I'm still rising, I'm not fully awake yet, I'm like, how can I deal with this, how much cash money do I have on me, how is there bottled water in the hotel room, can I call my, and then I'm like, oh, wait, I'm only on the second floor. That was a truck driving by, you know? And it like hit something hard, and it just went, dunk. So yeah, it's sort of a hobby with me.
I had a very similar thing that happened the other day. So I guess as like a PAX promotion thing, Uber has these special cars that are Mad Max cars. They're the cars from Mad Max Fury Road, just driving around, taking people around. And I woke up the first day of the convention, and I stepped outside of the hotel. I hadn't had any coffees, like, you know, rubbing my eyes. I stepped outside of the hotel, and three of these Mad Max cars with huge Uber logos drive by. And my first thought, no joke, I was like, well, it happened while I was asleep. Mad Max happened. Somehow Uber did it. I guess that kind of adds up. I don't know.
Oh. But what's been cool for you here at the con?
Oh boy. We're trying a bunch of new stuff. So we're doing like our panel. We do our cards panel. It already happened, but we're also doing like comedy shows every night, and that's going very well. We brought a bunch of friends from Chicago and some friends from LA, and we're doing all kinds of good comedy stuff. And then we've kind of got this like pop-up store set up with Exploding Kittens and World Builders and Ad Magic and cards.
How have the popsicles been going over?
Oh yes, the popsicles have been a hit. The last I saw, there were people waiting in line in the rain to eat a giant popsicle. So I guess that's really, really some good salesmanship on our part. Really did sell a popsicle to an Eskimo, I think.
Did you manage to get into the food truck and actually cut some onions?
No. Where's my? Kara brought me my. I have my knife roll ready to go. I'm gonna try and maybe I might head out this weekend. After our panel's done and try and work a shift in the... Well, so the original plan was I was going to go... We have a prep kit. So I should probably explain this. So we have like a food truck and we're making food for people because we have this food pack of cards. And I had the first day of PAX, there's a prep kitchen, and I had planned to wake up at like 8 in the morning and go to the prep kitchen and go, you know, I don't know, cut onions or whatever. You know, just like, I just wanted to work the line, like be part of it, like put in some work. And I set my alarm, and I woke up at like 8 in the morning the day before the convention, and I was like, nope. I was like, if that's my job, I would just be fired right now. Like, that's a whole career that just came and went.
Yeah. Well, and you initially said, yeah, I'm going to go do this. And I'm like, I love just cutting things up that don't read anything into that either, right? It's like, I'm like, yeah, I love being kitchen bitch. That's the term for it in our group. It's like, you're not in charge of what's being cooked. It's like somebody goes, cut up this onion. And I cut up the onion. Then you give it back. And they go, cut up this. And they go, go get this for me. And you're just the gopher. And I'm a really good gopher helper type. And I'm really tired of being like a manager type who tells other people to go do things. It's really nice to take orders for a while. So you said you were going to do it. I'm like, I'm going to go do it too. But I haven't been there either.
You want to see if we can get in today or tomorrow and go cut some stuff?
I'm leaving tomorrow. I'm leaving tomorrow fairly early.
Oh, all right, good excuse. Typical excuse. Well, we have, it looks like we probably have about 20 minutes left. Do we want to try and do some Q&A? I mean, it's a pretty unique...
Yeah, we can take advantage of the venue here and see if anybody has questions. We could do our best to answer them.
So we have Tom and Jen are going to come out with microphones.
We saw a quick hand go up there in the back.
Yeah. So put your
If you're listening to the podcast right now, you can think your question really hard, and it will just maybe make you feel good. We can't actually. It won't travel through time.
Are we ready?
Yeah.
Okay, first question.
Hi, thanks for coming. So you both have done pretty adventurous things. Pat, even though you're a novelist, you also have done world builders, and Max with Cards Against Humanity, you guys will basically do anything. With one of your endeavors, was there a point where you felt, okay, I've gone too far, this is out of my wheelhouse, we can't achieve this, and how did you get past that point?
So to summarize that, in case it doesn't go through here, have we
Well, it
ever...
started out by saying how great we were.
Yeah,
I feel like we should recap that.
Step one...
Can we get that on the microphone?
We are badass.
Yeah, we're pretty cool.
Okay. Step two was, have we ever attempted badassery to such a degree that we were fearful of our own failure?
Yeah, I can talk about that. So I can talk about that with respect to cards especially. But, you know, it's funny. With cards, probably the defining thing of, like, the whole company is that we're not quite equipped to do the things that we're doing. We really don't know what we're doing. So, like, we're not comedy writers. We're not printers. Like, we did not go into this with any of the skill sets that would have made us good at doing what we're doing. So our strategy has been to kind of, like, it's like the kitchen sink strategy. It's like we try a lot of things, and you see the ones that work and that are funny, but you don't see, for every one thing that works and is funny, there were like 20 things that we started and abandoned, or there was a problem and we scrapped it. I mean, even at PAX, there are things that we tried that were too ambitious or they didn't work and they got cut, and people don't see that. But that's the difference between... I think a lot about this idea of with anything, with cards or with any project, there's smart and there's lucky, and everybody, regardless of, you know, circumstance, money, skill level, where you are, everybody gets lucky. Everybody gets opportunities all the time in their life, no matter how bad things are going. You always have opportunities in front of you, and smart is knowing when you get lucky and seizing upon it to do something good or destroy your enemies in a moment of weakness. That's it, right? And that just comes with practice of, like, if you also, like, the other thing is, like, we try and set very clear goals. So, like, with PAX, our goal, you know, just use this as an example, like, our goal is we want to make people laugh and we want to make a spectacle and we want to create something that can only happen in this time, in this place, for these people. And once you have a really clear goal, suddenly everything becomes a lot easier because, well, what counts as a solution to that? You already figured it out by asking the question. Like, difficult answers are always implicated in the question. So it's a lot about, like, asking a good question for yourself and then waiting until you get lucky, until you have the right idea, until you're in the shower and you have the right idea, or you come up with, you say the dumb thing or the funny thing, and then smart is like, that's good. We're gonna figure out how to do that.
Smart is also realizing when what you're doing is not working, and either stopping or changing direction on it. That's key. Being able to abandon, or in my particular case, my strategy is usually, yeah, I will do something dumb and it will go really badly, and then I will write about it on the blog. You know, like my numerous coffee experiments. None of them were successes. You know, it occurred to me that it was taking me a long time to get the requisite amount of caffeine into my body. So you might as well, I wanted to drink the whole pot of really strong coffee, but it takes a long time. Plus, I don't like coffee. And so I thought I would just boil this coffee down in a saucepan until it formed like a sauce of sort, like a syrup, kind of like a tar-like substance. And then I could put that on ice cream or something. It'd be like super coffee concentrate extract.
I honestly don't know how we're friends. Friends is a strong word. Acquaintances.
You know, and so I tried that, and it was not a success. That was one of my many coffee experiments, which ended up with me throwing up a lot. Depending on what you consider a lot, you know? There have been a few of those. But, you know, then I cop to it. I just write about it online, and everyone goes, you are an idiot, Rothfuss. And that's, I like that because it sets expectations for the future very low. You know, that's the secret to happiness is low expectations.
What? So I have kind of a riff on this question for you.
Yeah.
So one of my flaws when I'm doing a creative thing, so I see this in myself a lot when I'm editing video, right? So if I'm editing a video together, there's a term in editing which is falling in love with your footage, which is like you shot something or you have this moment and it has no place in the story, like it just doesn't work, but you can't cut it because you fell in love with your footage, right? Do you, I've gone both ways on it. I've been really stubborn and I've been like, nope, it's good, it's staying, even though it doesn't, I kind of know in my heart that it doesn't belong. And I've also cut it and been like, man, I wish people could have seen it with that. You know, I wish people could have get the same thing out of it that I did, even though I know they probably can't. Do you go through that with writing? Do you ever write stuff and fall in love with it and it becomes hard to make the necessary edits?
Back in the day, yes. And even though I haven't been published for a huge long time, I've been a writer for much, much longer than that. And so, you know, I've gotten used to cutting stuff out just to see if it works better without, you know, this scene that I like. What I do is I actually just have a different file artistically named Hacked Bits. That, you know, because at one point I'm like, God damn this book. You know, I'm like, I'm just going to try to make it 70,000 words shorter because it's not working. So I went and I cut out everything that I could, but I didn't want to lose those things. So I put them into a different file, just took out everything I could. I just hatcheted away at it. And so at this point, the Hacked Bits file has numerous cut chapters and scenes, and sometimes even just like a sentence or two. I'm like, that's a great sentence or two. I'll just stick it in there. It lets me get over that anxiety. You know, I might be able to go in and use it somewhere else. But all that is a mental trick because I very rarely go hunting through that file looking for those things that I cut.
When you pass away, your estate can turn that into a multi-million dollar empire.
Yes, that will be my Cimmerillion.
Lackluster fiction in the Kingkiller universe.
Yeah.
From the mind of Patrick Rothfuss.
My self-created fanfic. It doesn't match up with anything else.
Do we have another question?
Got one right here.
As you're both talking about surviving disasters and you were saying you're glad to live in Wisconsin, you do know about the New Madrid fault line, right?
The what fault line?
There's a fault line that goes through the Midwest called the New Madrid fault line that if it went, would take out pretty much most of the Midwest all the way up through Wisconsin and Chicago.
What do you mean take out?
As in it would liquefy a good portion of the Midwest.
Is that something that is, I mean, it sounds like, I did hear something about this, but this is a dead fault
no.
That does not, don't fuck around with me.
Oh, I'm legitimately not fucking around with you. I'm dead serious.
It Wait, can I say, Anna, can I say what you do?
Oh, yeah, hi.
Hi, Anna works in the Coast Guard, and she's like probably the biggest badass in this room, and she knows what she's talking about. I'm sorry, Pat.
Okay, so.
Sorry you had to find out this way.
So now you brought it up. Now I'm going to ask some follow-ups here. Because here, the statistics of the megaquake hitting in the next 50 mm-hmm. years is 15%.
Correct.
What are the numbers on the Wisconsin fault?
I don't have them, but if you look at the spill of
national... Then it's just a fairy tale.
If you look at the spill of national significance exercise that happened in 2007 simulating an earthquake, it actually has all of those statistics along with how much oil would spill in the area and where the liquefaction would happen.
Could you pass that to Max and he'll put it in the little thing underneath the podcast?
Yeah, we'll put this... For listeners of the podcast, we'll have links to this imaginary fault line that may or may not exist.
It's good book that I learned this before I pour the foundation of my new house, you know?
We'll have it in the show notes, which are available for this episode and every episode at untitledrothfuss.com.
Dum dum dum.
See how I did that? Wasn't that
smooth? That was pretty good.
It was smooth.
That was really smooth.
Thank you. All right, well, that was depressing.
Question?
Thanks for bringing everybody down. We were doing friendly apocalypse before.
All right, keep your hands up if you have a question. Jen, you got?
Yeah, we got one.
Okay.
Thanks. So, Mr. Rothfuss, you spoke yesterday at your panel about your editing process and described it as, I believe, a hot mess and went through lots and lots of revisions. I'm just curious, what is the Cards revision process like?
So the question is, what's the editing process for Cards Against Humanity? So it's interesting because we don't there's not as much of a precedent, I would say, for doing a writing project like Cards Against Humanity as there is for a novel. I mean, there's like books about writing novels, and we really didn't have anything. So our process is based on, this sounds ridiculous, but it's 100% true. There's a This American Life episode called Tough Room, where they send a reporter in to sit in the writer's room of The Onion. And when we started working on Cards, we were like, well, The Onion is the fun. You guys know The Onion, right? The newspaper, the fake news. So we were like, The Onion is the funniest thing we know that exists. And here's this little 10-minute radio piece about how their writing process works. So we're just going to cargo cult that. We're going to do, without really understanding why it works, we're going to do exactly what they do. So the way it works is everybody pitches card ideas into a Google spreadsheet that we call the Hopper. And the Hopper is just like unfiltered insanity. Like it's just total fucking craziness that we would never publish. It's really bad. I mean, maybe 1 in 100 cards is decent on the Hopper. And then, but it's big. There's thousands and thousands of ideas. And also, this is based on what The Onion does, it's all anonymous. So you don't know, you know, I can put my craziest inner monologue, just the craziest shit that I think of on there, and the other guys, the other people in the company aren't like judging me or being like, wow, what's up with that guy?
Well, to be fair, they probably are, but not about this.
Yeah, it's just about the things I say out loud on this podcast, which are crazy enough. And then about once a week, Monday night, we do a Google Plus Hangout, and one person becomes like the team leader, and they take cards off the Hopper that they think are funny, and they try to sell them to the group, and they argue for it, and the group tries to rip it apart. So it's kind of a hostile, you know, we're very candid with each other, and it's kind of this like you try and destroy the joke, and they try and fight for it. And it's really fun because all the ego is taken out of it. Like we're not arguing over whether Max's joke is good or bad. We're just arguing over the joke on its own merits. And then if they survive that process, they go into another spreadsheet called the shortlist. And then maybe 3 or 4 times a year, we meet, we go over the shortlist, and then we'll take cards from the shortlist and place them into products. So like if we notice a theme, we might make a themed pack. You know, if we just have a bunch of jokes, that might be like a regular expansion. But that's sort of the system that we've devised for ourselves.
Can we talk about a thing that might happen later?
I don't know what
the thing that.
Oh yeah, should we say it?
Could we tease with that a little bit?
Sure, I'll leave that up. This is all you. So
I don't know what your process is for spreading word about things like this.
We just tell everybody. We have NDAs.
Yeah, our process. Our process is we never. This is something. Another thing we just sort of cargo culted from Apple. And Apple doesn't announce things, pretty much they don't announce things until you can buy them, which is great because then everyone gets excited about it and they have a very clear action they can take, which is they can go buy it.
So should we not?
That's up to you, man.
Let's do it. Pat, let's do it.
How about this? We'll do it a little bit. We'll say that some of my people are working with your people on the things that your people do.
Yes.
And that will probably be happening in the future.
Yeah, maybe around the holidays.
Sometimes around the holidays.
Like if there was some sort of cool charity auction.
In conjunction with a charity that one of us might be involved with.
I don't know. Very ambiguous. Could be anything.
Could we vague that up for you? Yes, we could.
Any other questions? Boy, I feel like that was a really boring answer in retrospect. It was a lot of spreadsheets. Right here.
Hi, I've enjoyed your podcast series very much, and I think the rest of us here have as well. Can you talk a little bit about possibilities for collaboration in the future?
The question is, I'll start with the first part, which is he likes the podcast.
Yay!
So the question is, have we talked about what we're going to do in the future? We actually have not. We committed to do. So I'm into this thing in my life right now where it's from this blog post by my friend Diana Kimball, and she talked about having no infinity projects anymore. So she will not start projects in her life where the end date is infinity. So I'm into this thing in my life right now where anything I start, it has an end date, so it has like some set amount of I do it and then it's finished. So that was where we came up with like we'll do 10 episodes and see what happens.
And that was really smart. It's something I need to start adopting because I'll say, yeah, I'll do this thing, and then I do it forever. If it's a success, you feel bad about putting it down, and if it's a failure, you feel like you're just kind of dropping it. So you're almost committed to everything you do to do it forever. And so when you said, yeah, let's pick an end date, and then it's almost like a term marriage. You know, it's like, let's be married for, you know, 12 weeks.
Yeah.
You know, and then after that, we can see if we want to get married again.
Yeah.
I will say that I've had a great time.
I have too.
It's been delightfully easy. I get to talk with somebody who I love conversing with every week. And I mean, not that I don't want to do something nice for y'all, but
that's me. Pat's talking about me.
You know, but it's fun to do this, and I get to talk about things. It would take me like 6 hours to write about in a blog, but I can just chat it out with you.
Yeah, I love doing the podcast. I would say my biggest concern about it is, when this is something we've talked about on the podcast too, is it's taking a thing that I really like in my life for sort of selfish purposes and sort of, you know, it's a thing that means a lot to me, just having a conversation with you, and it's turned it into a project, you know, where it's like consumed by other people, and that sort of changes the tone of it a little bit. But on the other hand, like we've done a remarkably good job staying on schedule.
Yeah.
And even the weeks where I didn't, you know, we didn't post a podcast, we did, you know, we've had calls and we've recorded and then just decided, you know, for whatever reason we were too tired or schedule didn't work or whatever that we weren't going to post that episode. But yeah, I would certainly be interested in finding a sustainable way to continue it. But you know, just as long as it doesn't turn our friendship into some sort of like work obligation. Like,
exactly.
I gotta go talk to Pat now for an hour.
No, it's always been a delight. Something I always look forward to. And so we should, you know, negotiate another term marriage at some point. We won't do that here. That's just for us. But you'll probably be seeing some more stuff in the future like that.
All right, I think we have time for one more question. Jen?
Yeah, right here.
Hey, this is actually for Pat. I was just wondering if you would let us know a little bit about the work that you're going to be doing with Numenera.
Oh, I am writing a little piece of a game called Torment Numenera. And rather than talk about it a bunch, I have chatted about it on the blog a few times. I'm writing a companion character for that game, and I've been chatting with them about it. I met with some of them this con because they were here, and we're knocking some of the corners off of the concept. A lot of people don't know that before I ever tried to write books or stories, I tried to write a computer game. So I've always been fascinated by that sort of storytelling, and I get to give it a try with those guys. We'll link up to the blog where I initially talk about that below the below the podcast. So, because I wrote a long, long blog about exactly what I would be doing there and why it was emotionally healthy for me to do these side projects and not just endlessly slave on book three.
Well, I think that is our time for the podcast. And since this is the finale, I feel like I should just say thank you so much to all of our fans and the listeners of the podcast and people who have stuck with us. Like, the podcast has been really, really successful in terms of like people listening to it, and it's kind of weird and cool because I feel like I don't speak for Pat, but for me, I've gotten to share like a version of myself that I don't really talk about publicly. Like, I've gotten to, you know, talk about creative struggles and some sad things and some dark things in my life, and it's nice that you know, people listen to that, and then they listen the next week, and they don't hate me as much as I hate me.
That's the only thing that we can really hope for, is that people like us a little better than we like ourselves, which for me is really hard because I am like super awesome and I love myself a lot.